Hello and welcome to Untold, the podcast that goes behind the scenes interviewing founders and business leaders about their untold journeys. We go further than botched up deliveries. It's tough out there and we want to tell the hardships that go with it and the effects this can have on guests' mental health. Key insights and tangible takeaways to help you, our listeners, continue on your journey. I'm Harry Turpin, founder of The Savourist, and I'm also your host. Let's do it. As always, keep jiggling. Welcome to Untold, the podcast where we go behind the scenes speaking to founders and business leaders about the challenges of setting up and running a business. Social media likes to glamorize the new listings, the overnight successes, and the huge fundraisings. These are all, of course, part of the journey, and the wins need to be celebrated. But it is also important to normalize the tough, terrifying, anxiety-inducing moments too. Today's episode is a really special one in the Savourist and Untold's journey, as it's the first time we've got a live audience. Hello! Hey! For the last couple of years, the Savourist has tried to raise money to support the amazing work that Movember do. Last year, we did a pub quiz, and tonight we've sold tickets with all money going to Movember. Why Movember needs everybody. Mental health and suicide prevention. Globally, we lose a man to suicide every minute of every day. Like, that is just a horrific stat that shocked me to the core when I first read it. They also support prostate cancer, which is the most common cancer in men over 45, and testicular cancer, the number one cancer in young men. Movember are taking them all on, and it makes me really proud that we can do our little bit to help. So thank you so much for coming along. Thank you so much to our wonderful listeners for giving us your time. At The Savourist, we're evolving our support for mental health, and more will be revealed next year, but it's a core value that's ingrained in us from the start. I want to just quickly say a massive shout out to Perry, who's over here from Terralon Media, for pulling together and recording for us this evening. Terralon's a creative visual content marketing agency that create campaigns and content that make your brand look really, really good. I got that from their website. Perry Perry is also my brother-in-law, so he didn't really have a choice. But I also want to big up the Berksy team for bringing the delicious hard seltzers along. If you hadn't had one yet, make sure you do. Light, refreshing British hard seltzer made from fruit, also from their website. But it is, they're wicked, wicked drinks. Super pumped that you guys are here, and we'll crack on. So I want to introduce you to who we've got sat here and these amazing guys that are giving up their time to spread their stories and be really honest. We've got Josh from Can of Water, we've got Teddy from Perfect Ted, and we've got Harry from Corin & Co. I'll introduce Josh and Teddy in a bit, but I just want to kick off with Harry, because I've followed his journey for a while, and I just think I'll let him do the introduction because he'll be a lot better than I will. But I just think what you're doing is amazing for our industry, but also wider industries. And I think I'm honoured that you've joined us to tell your story, man. So like, welcome and give us all about you.
No, thank you very much. Can you hear me okay? So that's my croaky voice. It's quite funny you talk about like the realities of setting up a business. I can't talk about from the food and drink space. My voice is about to go any minute. So like today was, this new mental health app that's launching. It's called Jack, Just Ask a Question. And I had to answer like 120 questions like in a row around suicide. And so yeah, today's been like the hardest day I've ever had running a business, 100% truth. So yeah, quite a timely one, but like important one as well. But no, thank you very much for having me, your comments. I guess I think it's probably easier for me to take everyone back to like the start of what life was like. And I think that would make more sense than as to why I do the work that I do now. So I grew up in Cornwall, St. Ives, holiday town, cocktails, beach, barbecues, where you're meant to be happy most of your life. And for me, I love my hometown. I love what it did for me, but also I have like a love-hate relationship with Cornwall and St. Ives. So I grew up on a campsite. My mum and dad managed a campsite, so like life was pretty good. I had like a football pitch on that campsite. I just got to play football every day and holiday with people who would, yeah, come on holiday in my back garden. So like, you know, life couldn't be much better. Fell in love with Alan Shearer as a little boy. So wanted to just, yeah, be him, play football as much as I could. Mum and dad hated me because they had to take me to Newcastle and spend all their money going to St. James's Park. Now it's quite good. We're obviously quite a good team. But for most of my life, that was it. And then, yeah, I woke up normal school day. You know, we have county shows, right? And that was the day I woke up normal school day, going to this county show, and could hear that there were like people downstairs, like people like in the front room and kitchen area. And yeah, went downstairs. And yeah, that's the day I found out that I lost my father to suicide. That like picture, like Rosie's story that I shared, like just stopped, like stopped completely, like in its tracks. And yeah, I don't really like remember what life was like at that point, but I remember a couple of bits from that day. I asked to go to school, just wanted to go to the fairground rides and be myself. Mum didn't let me. Instead, she said, you can play football. So I played football all day. And then I'd be like, shit, like, what have they told me? Like, my dad isn't here. Like, lost my dad to suicide or what? I just couldn't work it out. I couldn't fathom what on earth they told me. And I'd have this thing where like I would occasionally think about what they had said, even when I was playing football at 12 years old on the day. And I'd just like block it out, hold my nose, block it out, completely stop. And then like click like back in the room. And I did that for like a decade after. So like I would kept on going through life thinking that if I told anyone or admitted that I wasn't coping, then yeah, you're going to judge me. You're going to think that I'm weak. You're not going to think that, you know, it's beaten me, like suicide has beaten me. And I was just adamant that no one would think that of me. So I, yeah, went through life like I should have done as a guy, trying to do all the things that I was meant to do without anyone really knowing what happened, unless you grew up very close to me and you knew that. And it was quite easy to, you know, hide your identity when you were from Cornwall and you move away. So I did just completely fake life that I created. Yeah, there'd be people that I was like dating who thought my dad was alive. I thought he was a fireman, thought he was an electrician. And yeah, this lie just kept on getting deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And I was like, shit, what have I done? And this point was when I was, yeah, in a very good job, selling like gold and silver to people who had way too much money. And at 21 doing that, like, everyone's like, oh, it's really good. Like, how did you get into that? Like, what's life like? And I'll just be like, yeah, it's really good. This is what I'm doing. Like, I was in a very, very dark, low mood for that entire time. And just, yeah, couldn't find any joy, happiness, love for anything that I wanted to, yeah, be passionate about, and just start questioning my own like existence. Like, what the hell am I doing? Like, why have I lied to this point? I got to this point I was materialistically meant to get to, and that's just shit. I can't find a way out of it. And that was the very first time when I started to drink too much alcohol, spend too much money, get angry with everyone, not check the football scores, not keep myself clean and tidy. I thought, okay, I need to do something. Like, this lie had got too much. This like stigma around not talking got too much. And yeah, I just went to a GP, poured my heart out to this poor GP. And she encouraged me to access counseling and medication to support my mental health. And I said, yeah, I'll do it. And I just had this like weight that had like come off my shoulders in the 30-minute consultation. Walked out, had this in my hand, had everything set up, and convinced myself I didn't need any of it in a 20-minute car drive from going from a doctor's surgery back to my home. And I was like, I don't need that. Like, I've got through shit in the past. I've got through adversity in my life. I can get through this as well, because I had stuff going for me. And yeah, obviously didn't. Life, the reckless behavior, the thought processes, the lack of love and enjoyment just got worse and worse and worse. And just, yeah, quit my job and told my family that I was moving from selling, yeah, gold and silver to a snack bar company they'd never heard of, called Kind. Obviously you know what Kind is. Back then, like, I'd never tasted it, didn't really like nuts that much, and but quite like the fact that the founder had a vision behind him. Read his book, it's called Do the Kind Thing, and I got quite gripped by nothing really to do with the bar, but just the everything that he stood for, called Daniel Levetsky. He's on Shark Tank in the US. And thought, yeah, going to quit that and go and do that. And yeah, a member of my family said that I'd lost my mind. And I said, yeah, I think I have. I remember that. I said, oh, yes, I have. And they didn't know anything at this point. They didn't know about the GP. They didn't know. They thought life was just fine and I wasn't impacted by what happened. So I guess, yeah, moved to London. Our office block was on the South Bank WeWork office. This is like February 2018 when I moved there. It's not even that long ago. And I was commuting into Waterloo Station, walked out the other side of Waterloo Station, commuting into the shared office space, went to the top floor, had a meeting with a new colleague and looked out the window. And suddenly there were these people standing on the building about 500 meters down the road. Quickly to the naked eye, like these people were about to jump. So you can imagine how weird that is. Like imagine this was on like the top floor, you're looking out and a huge skyscraper and there was people standing on the edge. My heart just like sank, completely sank. And that moment completely changed my life. So what happened is that I froze, got my phone out and typed people on ITV Tower Studio London. What that was an activation, a stunt to raise awareness of male suicide. It was called Project 84, and 84 is the number of men who die by suicide every single week in the UK in 2018. So I was like, it's too much for a 9 a.m. meeting that next to people I don't know. At this point, Kind had 9 people, so it was tiny. And I then clicked on the link that I searched on there. So I knew it was the ITV Tower Studio. It's a pretty ugly building like on the South Bank. And yeah, real life stories of people who had lost someone to suicide. So, you know, whilst they weren't real people on the rooftop, they had been built by family members who lost someone, brother, dad, uncle, best friend. So I was looking at this out of a window in the new workplace and was then reading stories of people who had lost someone to suicide or other guys who had been impacted by, yeah, experiencing poor mental health. And that hand on heart truth, that was the first time I'd ever connected with something or someone that felt something similar to me. And I did that in my first 3 weeks at a new business. And yeah, I just went back home, was living in Elsfield and just did calculations. What, 84 men a week, each one of them is probably a brother or boyfriend or an uncle or dad. And then I was like, this isn't just me. Like, it's not just me for my whole life thinking it was just me. And yeah, I then, you know, that was my first slice of luck that I got, that I happened to be able to live in Southwest London, to then commute into Waterloo, to then be in a shared office space, free coffee in a glass panoramic window, seeing a charity activation on the Thames. I was thinking like, no, why have I got that luck? Like nobody, everywhere else I've grown up, people won't see this. They won't know about this charity. They won't know about suicide. And it's not just them. And I had this like burn inside of me to just challenge everything that I'd done to cope with it in the past. And yeah, Kind was then bought by Mars a couple of months later. So I suddenly had a platform to talk about my passion for this. And yeah, 9 people moved to a business of 120,000 people across the world, selling pretty much everything. And I just shouted about it. And yeah, people just kind of took note and kind of listened, I guess, to some of the advice that I gave. And it ended up before COVID being my job to train people, educate people in mental health, suicide across the Mars business. And yeah, we did some amazing stuff. We had, you know, Dr. Alex fronting Kind Bar sales in Tesco and WH Smith and going too calm. And yeah, went to the House of Lords to talk about our work. And it was just, we were just telling our story and why kindness and mental health is so important. And then yeah, left to set up my own business. So I do exactly the same thing I did for Mars, but just for other people now. And Mars still.
It's absolutely amazing, mate.
That was whistle stop tour, but I wanted.
No, no, you wanted that. Brilliant, and like, I can't thank you enough for being so honest about this. Right. Like it's amazing, and I find like what you're doing now and taking the unbelievable hard journey that you've been through, and now pushing it out and being able to talk about it and help other people is just unbelievably inspirational. So thank you for sharing it. I want to obviously bring in Teddy and Josh now as well. Josh, if we come to you first, mate, like I'd love to sort of give our listeners like the opportunity to hear about your story and where Canna Water's come from. Like I know there won't be any listeners that don't know the brand. I think I was saying to you before we kicked off, like I remember being at Lord's once to watch the cricket, and it must have been four or five years ago now. And I remember, like, I followed your journey pre that, but then there was that moment where you're like, fucking hell, these boys are stocked here. This is unbelievable. Like, you know, that moment that you kind of, you start seeing it everywhere. And I think I'm sure you're now susceptible to people being like, wow, like an overnight success, amazing, amazing. But as everyone knows, there's like an unbelievable amount of graft that goes into that to start with. So it'd be great to sort of hear a bit of color around that.
For sure. Harry, that was amazing, mate, honestly. And I've been following your journey as well, and it's inspiring. See, you know, it's funny with Can of Water, because everyone, I get 10 messages a day from people just sending me pictures. Oh, you're here, you're here, you're here. And I actually think that the majority of people that see Can of Water that don't know the story, they just think that it's owned by like a, you know, like a massive, massive business. And it's just fucking like, you could just start, it's like a Coca-Cola brand type of thing. And it's not, you know, it's not been the case for us. It's been, you know, blood, sweat and tears. But I think that, I always like to talk about my journey, because I think that the canned water is a strange concept, very, very strange concept. Something that, you know, a lot of people, when we first started, you know, you talk about your family thinking you're crazy. You can imagine my family when I told them that I was putting water in a can. but my background is enormous, enormous doubt that I could ever amount to anything. You know, ADHD at a young age, couldn't concentrate, complete lunatic running around, never had any purpose or any idea of, you know, of what I could do or what I could be. Academic was not something that was very in my agenda whatsoever. It wasn't that I didn't want to be academic, but it was something that I didn't have it in me. I couldn't concentrate on anything that I wasn't interested in. So yeah, academia for me was parked, and I was more of a creative guy who was very into music, art. I'm a DJ, I've been DJing since I was sort of 11 years old. So music is an enormous passion for me, and something that when I'm completely in something, you know, I'm there. But struggled enormously as a kid with not feeling like I had any purpose, and also suffered severely with addiction as a kid as well, which I'm 13 years clean off of alcohol. So I haven't drunk for many years, but addiction was a massive part of my journey as well, where I, you know, I just sort of, it was all about sort of like, I wasn't happy. So it was like drink or whatever it was, I'd find anything to just fill a void because I wasn't happy, and I put myself down so much. So even now when people refer to me as a, you know, as an entrepreneur, or even when I got a Forbes 30 under 30, it's like, is it real? Like, is it actually real? So fast forward to, you know, I was 22 years old. Me and my two other mates, who are also a bunch of dropouts, the three of us went on a trip to Thailand and saw how bad the plastic problem was. And, you know, I always say to people that we were part of the problem before. You know, we were the type of people that would, you know, flick our cigarettes out the window or throw shit out of the car, you know, that standard sort of stupid 18-year-old mentality. And plastic pollution wasn't in our agenda. It wasn't something that we knew existed. But when going to Thailand and seeing copious amounts of plastic building up on the ocean of brands that we knew, like Evian, Coca-Cola, etc., you know, it's sort of like, how is this possible? How is this happening? And it's scary, you know? So we, you know, I think 90% of people would just come back from that trip and they'll just be like, it's not my problem, you know, it's not my issue. But I think that the three of us were sort of like, we didn't have any cooling, and we had, you know, we had a bit of time, and we just sort of, we became completely and utterly obsessed with trying to make a difference and trying to come up with a solution. And through loads of research, for weeks, you know, looking at different packaging. We didn't have science degrees, you know, we couldn't just pluck something out of, like, you know, thin air. But through doing so much research, we saw that aluminium, you know, is the most recyclable material on the planet. And when you recycle a can, it will always come back as another can. And it had such a great message that you know, we spent the next sort of 6 to 8 months really trying to figure out, are we going to be the first people in the world to put water in a can? And then in 2016, we launched Can of Water. You know, it's just first thing, you know, the first can of water in the world. And it was a really, really scary experience that was just the most bootleg thing ever, really, at the time, because everyone just thought that we were mad, and everything that we did was with no experience. And, you know, fast forward, this is the bit that I like to talk about with people, because you talk about how, you know, everyone's like, oh, wow, you're in Tesco. Wow, you're here. Wow, you're there. They never see the bad times. They never see the tough times. And, you know, we're about 6.5 years old. For about 3.5, nearly 4 years, I probably went home at least once a week in tears, because I got laughed at by people on the phone. I had no sales experience. I'd call up anyone everywhere and I'd be like, we got this can of water. It's going to be the greatest thing ever. And it would just be like, nah, this is the most stupid idea ever. It's never going to work. Who's going to want cans of water? Blah, 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 blah. And that was it. And it was like the three of us were in the office looking at each other like, are we the only people in, you know, that think that we've got something here? And it's that every day just getting told this is stupid. You know, my dad once come home from work. He was like, oh, I saw someone, and he's like a family friend, and he just was sort of slating can of water and what's wrong with these people. And just that was the mentality, is that because I wasn't in recruitment or property or whatever everyone else was in at the time around me from school, I was deemed to be, you know, to be different. So I'll never forget it. We had so many ups and downs, and it was the most depressing sort of 3.5 years. And this is where it all changed. We brought in a managing director to sort of overlook the business. We had a few little things like Selfridges and all the places that all the startups get, you know, your Whole Foods, your Planet Organic. And I think reality hit in, and we just realized that sort of, this is hard. This is really, really, really hard. And our MD basically said, listen, I've looked at everything. The business is going bankrupt. You know, you've got a cool brand. You might be doing something with Stormzy, or you might be doing something with, you know, this cool guy. He's like, but the brand isn't, you know, it's not going anywhere at the moment. We've got to, you know, unless the mentality changes, we've got 3 months to give it our all. And if by the end of that 3 months, we don't get anywhere, we basically just call it a day. You go back to your jobs, and you know, at least we know that we gave it our all. And I'll never forget on the last month, which was at the end of I think it was 2018. It was like, in my mind, I was basically making plans for a new job, and I didn't really know what I was going to do. But in the last month, David Attenborough did Blue Planet, and there was like an episode where a whale had died and its kid was sort of like crying type of thing. And it was horrible to watch. And it was literally the strangest thing. Overnight, we went from being the most stupid thing that ever existed to being like the most needed product in London. Every seed that we had planted, people were like, it is literally like what happened was they saw the episode. People, you know, high up in the businesses were turning around and saying, we've got to get rid of plastic. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's terrible. They then went on the journey that we went on to when we went to Thailand, where they would type in into Google alternative to plastic, see that aluminium was better. Then they would remember these three idiots that called them up 6 months before. Those guys from that stupid canned water company. And then, you know, and then it really sort of overnight, it sort of was like that seed was planted. And, you know, we went from selling a few hundred thousand cans in 3 months to 12 million in 1 year, which was pretty scary. And you know, every day still is a pinch me moment, because the fact that I'm even sitting here today from, like, you know, if you said to people that knew me 10 years ago that I'd be where I am today, they would just laugh in your face. They'd be like, no, not that guy. So, you know, it's great to be here, and it's great to, you know, talk a bit deeper into the tough times, rather than always sort of talking about how amazing things are, because the truth is that's not it. Yeah. You know, that isn't
it. Yeah. I know, it's amazing, man. It's a wicked story. And it's one of those as well where now you look at can of water and you're like, of course that makes sense. Like, there's just nothing about it that doesn't make sense. And but back in the day, it must have been seriously tough. And I want to sort of just unpick a little bit there. When you were like starting to look for other jobs and kind of what was going on, was that,
did you still have a little bit inside you that was like, this is like, I'm not done yet? Or, I mean, obviously you did, because it carried on, but emotionally, talk me through that moment where you're like, that kind of split between like, I probably should find a job, but it's absolutely not what I want to be doing right now. And how did you kind of come through that to then get to a point where it then kicked off?
For sure. So I think that a word that always pops up, well, there's a few words, there's like, you know, the naivety of the three of us, because I think that, you know, a lot of people within the food and drinks world probably would have never have created a brand like this. So we were very sort of naive at the beginning. And, you know, we most people get told, no, this isn't going to work. And I think that a lot of the time it really damages their confidence. And it, you know, the person I am today and the thick skin that I have today is completely different to the 22, 23 year old that started Can of Water. You know, I don't let things bother me, because the truth is that, you know, a funny example, and I was saying it to Teddy before, I'm not going to say the brand, but one of the biggest brands in the country, I got an introduction to the founder of the brand. This brand is probably, it is probably in the top five biggest brands. And he literally sat there scrutinizing our product. He looked at it, he said, the plastic problem's not that bad, because he sells shitload of plastic. And he was like, you know, I don't see this getting into Tesco, it's just nothing about it. He just always just putting down negative, 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 and the faces and this and that. And you know, 4 weeks ago, I got invited to the head office of that brand to speak to their whole creative and marketing team. And it's so funny how the world works, because I could have just, we actually, you know, we could have just stopped Can of Water at that point. And I think that there's been so many moments where it's been like such low, hard, tough moments. A story that I love to talk about is after 3.5 years of pain and that David Attenborough moment happened, and we had so much interest, that summer, we basically were inundated and we had so many orders, and you know, we had to ramp up production, and we had, I think it was like 300,000 cans coming to the country that we needed to, you know, send out to whether it be London Zoo, Soho House, all of these places. And I remember being in the car after we spent 2 days packing everything and sending it out to the warehouse to our customers, and someone called me up, one of our customers, and they said, just, I don't know if this is something that you've heard before, but your water tastes really weird. Your still water tastes really, really weird. And I'm thinking, shit. So I drove to the warehouse and I drank from the new batch. And the manufacturers had put sparkling water in with our still water, but it was like still and sparkling water, so it tasted disgusting. And I remember me and my business partner, Ariel, just with our hands on our heads, just like, how are we going to get out of this? And it's those moments where you're like, we might never recover from it, but we did recover from it and we came together as a team. And I think that it's those moments where you sort of, you get that, you know, where you learn that actually everything's going to be okay. So that time where, you know, I was looking around and I was having sleepless nights and I couldn't sleep, and I was like seriously, you know, depressed. There was, and I think it is like an ADHD thing, that it sort of, in my mind, it was like, I'm not going to let this fall. I'm not going to let it fall. I'm not going to let it fall. I'm going to do everything. And we really, really, you know, to even, you know, you see it on the shelf, but the pain that's gone into making this, you know, making this work and continue today it's a lot of energy and a lot of work that we love, because we've got so much passion for it.
Yeah. It's amazing, man. It's class. And I think it's funny, isn't it? Like no matter what the size of the business, you can sit around as teams and kind of make a plan for the next year and draw up budgets and what's going to happen. But actually in crisis, you kind of go into that, like just autopilot mode. And actually that kind of works just as well as having a plan, right? I think it's Mike Tyson that said, like, everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the face. And it's like, it's such a sort of like poignant phrase. Hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Untold Podcast is brought to you by The Savourists. We're here to keep you jiggling at snack time. We have a range of mega flavour, loaded ingredient, real nutritious snacks They taste absolutely banging, and we have a brand new range of crunchets, which are made from black beans, edamame beans, puffed rice, seasoned with a Thai chili and a sizzling barbecue. Yes, I promise you, they are as delicious as they sound. Thanks so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of the episode and check us out, savouriest.com. Ta-da! Teddy, I want to bring you in here, man. Like, I love what I absolutely love about, like, all of us sat here together. It's like there's such different phases in the business, and Teddy, well, you do the spiel, man, because you'll be so much better than I will. But I've watched your journey, and I think it was Joe actually who's here that said the other day, like, we were talking about Perfect Ted and so the journey that you guys have gone on, and Joe was like, absolutely love those guys. They're mad as a box of frogs. And it was like, but that's like what has come out as like this amazing brand that you're building. And it's in its infancy stage, but it's like, it's class to watch, man. So like, love to hear your story and sort of how it's come about.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I know probably some of you are sitting there thinking, how much did I have to pay to get on this panel?
But,
but truthfully, I got on here because I brought Josh along. but no, honestly, thank you guys for sharing your stories. It's super inspirational. I guess my sort of story is a little bit different, and it's my mental health journey is probably the reason why I started Perfect Ted with my brother and best friend. So in 2019, I unfortunately lost my best friend to cancer, and I was working in Los Angeles in finance at the time. And it was, you know, growing up, I was generally a really happy kid. I never really had that mental health struggle or that same pain that you went through. But I remember after that sort of happened, I left my job. I took a leave of absence. I was like 18 at the time, moved back to London. And I just didn't cope with it well. I did the typical thing of like, the day that I flew back to London was because I knew that his treatment wasn't being effective. So I flew back to London and I was going to go see him in the hospital. And I still had that hope that he was going to recover, you know, like Jack, my best friend, like he's going to recover. And I landed in Heathrow and I came into arrivals and my mom was picking me up because, you know, I'm a Jewish boy from Hampstead and my mom loves me. and my mom just like embraced me and she gave me a hug and I was like, hi mom. And she just started crying on my shoulder. I'm like, mom, it's fine. I'm here. Let's go see Jack. And I was going to go straight from the airport to go and see Jack. And she just like was crying on my shoulder. I'm like, mom, what are you talking about? Like, I'm here. It's fine. And then at that point, she told me that unfortunately he'd passed while I was on the plane. And I think for me, that carried a lot of guilt because he was living in London. I went to university in America, was working out there. And, you know, if I'd left a day earlier from work, which, you know, in hindsight, obviously I would give anything to have been able to do that. So what I did was I drove straight from the airport to his family's home and he'd been taken away. And I just had so much guilt because I was like, why wasn't I there? Why was he? He wasn't alone. He was with his family. He was with his other friends. And I said, like, this, I need to see him. I need to see him. They were like, what do you mean you need to see him? He's gone. Like, I was like, I need to see him. So I then drove to, I don't know what the correct term is, but where they keep bodies. And they brought him out into like a room on a table. To be honest, I've actually never told this story. So I don't know why I feel like comfortable now in front of people I don't even know. But yeah, they brought him out. And I remember like they sort of like lifted over the cover and it wasn't him, you know, like it wasn't him. I can't explain, it just wasn't him. And I think that really like honestly fucked me up because I think that was the way I remembered him then at that point. That was like my last image. It wasn't like the happy, smiley chats that we'd had. It was that last image of, so how did I cope? I got a tattoo that day of his handwriting right here on my thigh that says, look at the bigger picture, which was like one of the final notes he wrote when he was going through treatment, which I thought for someone who needed strength most at that time, he was giving it to others. And for someone like that to have perspective during their hardest time for me was incredibly powerful. And so I also coped by just, I flew back to America the next day after the funeral and I went back to work. And that was the first time where I'd ever struggled with my mental health. I didn't laugh, I didn't smile, wasn't interested, was irritated. And for me growing up in London, it wasn't normal to see a therapist. It was, I remember, you know, in school, if someone had told me they were seeing a therapist, I would have thought, oh my God, they're probably suicidal. Like genuinely, that would have been my thought. And when I went to America, it was so normalized. Therapy was just so normalized. Most of my friends were seeing a therapist and they weren't suicidal. So after 6 months of being miserable, I decided to see a therapist. And it was the best thing that I ever did. And through those therapy sessions, sort of decided that I needed to do more with my life than work in finance and wanted to create something, moved back to the UK and started Perfect Ted. And I guess the way that that mental health struggle, now, you know, fortunate, very happy at the moment, but I think part of that struggle continues today in the sense of once Jack passed, I decided to carry on the weight of ambition. He was such an ambitious person. And, you know, he got first from Bristol. Thanks, Josh. Super, super smart, super talented. And so for me today, it's like the weight of how can I do this for myself and Jack? And I think sometimes that is a lot of weight for a person to carry. But it's also the thing that drives me.
Oh, man. I mean, thank you for sharing that story. I think it's just amazing and inspirational from all of you. I think it's very emotional as well. So thank you for being so open and honest. I think there's a real, what I've really taken out of that as well is a stigma around therapy. And I think like you're so right, in the UK still today, it's getting better. But I think in America, you get a job and it's a perk, like having a therapist. And in the UK, as you say, there's still a stigma around it. Like I remember nothing what you guys have been through, but I remember going through a stage in life where I had quite bad panic attacks and ended up in hospital a couple of times thinking I was having a heart attack. And then sort of kept going to see the GP. And then finally the GP was like, I don't think there's anything like physically wrong with you. I think you should go and speak to someone. And that was my kind of first entry into therapy and have kind of on and off seen a therapist for the last few years. And it's just amazing what it can do. I think the only way that I can really describe it in a kind of analogy is like, I'm not a gamer, but when you play a PlayStation game and you press pause and you can kind of get up and move around and go to the loo or whatever, like it feels like it's that kind of pause and like bird's eye view on your life. And you're like, okay, right, I've kind of got that out and I now know how I can go and address it and what to do from that. But yeah, that and actually I need to a quick shout out because my wife, who's here tonight at 36 weeks pregnant, was the one that took me into hospital and was there, and she's now come out at 36 weeks pregnant to be part of this. So kudos to Sophie. I just want to sort of bring it back to the Perfect Ted story. So from that, where did Perfect Ted, give us kind of Perfect Ted as a brand and where that kind of evolved from there?
Sure. So my co-founder, Marissa, who's my brother's girlfriend, and actually I live with my brother and his girlfriend, so it's a super weird situation. But it's a really fun house. We throw the best parties. Marissa suffered from ADHD and anxiety and found that, I'll make a story short, found that coffee and energy drinks were making her super anxious and exacerbated her symptoms. And so a friend recommended matcha. She started drinking matcha, found that it really helped. And when we moved to the UK, we were all living in the US, we moved to the UK, it was as simple as couldn't get a convenient matcha option. Like if you go to a cafe and you have bad matcha, tastes bitter, grassy, tastes like shit. And there wasn't a convenient on-the-go option. So we thought we're gonna be the solution. And that's when I called up Josh and was like, what do you think? He's like, I love it. The guy doesn't even drink caffeine. And he was like, I love it.
Amazing. Well, I mean, he couldn't be like, I hate it, man. This is shit. Half the story's just told.
Yeah, it's true. And we launched the concept on Kickstarter, which is basically where you launch the idea for a company and people choose to buy it before you've even produced it. So we hadn't even finished the recipe, hadn't finished the branding. And we did £10,000 of sales in think it was like 20 hours off no marketing budget. And we were like, oh, okay, wow, maybe there are some other people that actually want this product too. And we kind of went from there. But I mean, along the journey, before we even launched, it was like God was saying, do not launch this product, do not launch this product. Because we had the manufacturer pull out, we had a fire in our manufacturing facility, we had to completely change our, we were meant to launch a matcha latte, which turned into a matcha energy drink, just because the manufacturer pulled out. And then I remember when we finally did get a manufacturer, it's a great story, I think it is at least. We'll tell if you guys laugh or not. we went to the manufacturing site. It was amazing. I was so excited. We'd blown our load of Kickstarter funds on the ingredients. And we were waiting in the area where sort of the brands wait. And the owner of the factory comes out and he's wearing a white t-shirt, but he is covered in green, like all over, covered in green. And he looks at me. I look at him and he goes, we can't can the product. I was like, good one. Like, let's taste it. He's like, honestly, we can't do it. I'm sorry. I was like, you're joking. And I remember there standing, my legs shaking. I sat down and I mean, thankfully we got the product here. So we were able to can it in the end, but there were so many, I mean, there are, every day is such a challenge and you know, we're just starting our journey. We launched the drinks a year ago. So we're still figuring it out. Still faking it till we make it.
That's what it's all about, man. But I think you're like, I think it's funny, like we've had a few guests on now that are like some slightly bigger businesses, some slightly small businesses, and I think everyone's still faking it, man. Like it doesn't matter what stage you are, they're just faking different things. Like I think it's class, and I love watching you guys all over socials and all the comms. For those that haven't followed Perfect Ed, do, because I'm quite disappointed that you haven't got the Crocs on, man. That's a trademark of yours, right?
I know. I guess like a big, the one overarching theme of what we try to do is spread positive energy. So even if you guys hate our product, the fact that like, you know, every interaction we try to make people laugh, smile, giggle. I know it's a heavy topic tonight, but hopefully I can give you guys something to laugh about.
Oh man, but that's what it's all about, I think. Like, and what we're trying to achieve through Untold is kind of bringing these deep conversations, but bringing it in a way that the only way it's going to get normalized and people talk about it is that you mix it together, right? If it's too dark, then it's never going to become that mainstream topic that it needs to become. I want to go back to Harry here, because I know there's a couple of people in the audience that have had mental health training from you, and I want to just get more of a picture around you going into businesses and kind of the strategy that comes behind that, and how you then leave that with the team to kind of move on from that. I think like it's amazing, and I want to understand myself a little bit more about that side of it.
Yeah, definitely. Our training products, it's very different with each client that we work with. So we offer like certified accredited training courses, such as mental health first aid or applied suicide intervention skills training for like a variety of different sectors. Lots of it started within like food and drink, because that's where I knew. And then, yeah, obviously we work with very, very small companies all the way through to very large companies. When you say around like the training products we deliver, I've tried to build a training team. So there's myself and the trainers, we have so many different trainers we bring into projects, but realistically it's myself and six people that we will have in and about. That changes like quite often. And then I try to match now, obviously the course and press team, they trained me very early on and I was getting started up and it was kind of just me and then like a couple of people who would support every now and again. But I try and match people to environments now. So yes, you get like certified accredited training, which could be delivered by a large number of people. But like I've tried to handpick what I believe are like the best educators, best trainers in those products. And they all have their own personal real story as to why they're doing it and why they've quit their, you know, becoming a lawyer and managing a team of 50 people because they lost, a family member like by suicide. And it was connected to alcohol. So, well, actually imagine that story being told in an environment where there is alcohol and there is people who can connect with that person, not only for the actual course itself, but the human level. And when I was at Mars, we trained 250 people in mental health first aid skills. So if you walk into like pet food manufacturing sites in Leeds, all the way through to M&M's retail world in Leicester Square, like people are trained in the skills that I would train them in. And what it told me was it needs people to
bring that kind of magic out in a training room. Because you could do a training course and you could go again. And we hope that the products that we deliver are inspiring enough to actually for organizations to think, this has made us think. This has made us check. We want to do more. So what I've tried to do now with the business is build out other products, more specialized products for organizations to then continually train their teams. I think for me, like the most exciting part about what we do is that new suicide course. So applied suicide intervention skills training. I think workplaces are hesitant to talk about suicide. And I was quite aware that I wasn't doing enough around suicide, yet it was the reason why I was driven to do this work. So I basically just searched, the world sounds a bit extreme, but I just looked at every training product I could around suicide and thought, what is the best one? What's the highest certified one? What's the one that's got the most research and credibility around it? And yeah, my aim is to be the biggest provider of that course in the UK. That's like the longer term vision. But organizations are hesitant, you know. If I think yourself in the HR director's shoes, if I bring someone in to talk about suicide to my organization, does that give me a level of responsibility? If something happens, is it my fault? Can people listen to suicide? And the biggest myth and stigma around suicide is actually talking about suicide is the biggest preventative tool we have in society to actually prevent it. Yeah, organizations don't want to talk about it because there's fear around it. But that's part of the reason why we have a taboo around suicide. So yeah, like it's grounded in research, grounded in evidence, the training we do. But, you know, we try our very best to work with organizations in a very different way. Have different products to support, but all for real people.
So it's amazing, man. And it, like kudos for breaking through that as well, because it's phenomenal. I want to kind of integrate the sort of two here and loop back to Josh and Teddy and the tough times that you guys face. So like everyone has in starting a business, leading a business, there's the kind of misdeliveries, there's the sort of like day-to-day shit that is just part and parcel of it. But underneath that, and I guess kind of back in the early days for you, Josh, and Teddy now, and myself now at the Savorist, like to give our listeners some real tangible insights, how did you guys cope through those tougher times? So we've been through the stories, but how did you take that and then tangibly kind of, how can we help our listeners to be like, look, if you really are struggling, what helped you? Was it routine? Was it speaking to someone? Was it kind of, how do we sort of get that across? I hope I've sort of phrased that in an eloquent enough way, but Josh, if we come to you first, mate.
Yeah, no, for sure. So I was quite fortunate because I've been part of Alcoholics Anonymous from a young age, where, you know, you just basically sit in a room of people and just talk. And for me, when I first was part of that, for years I was petrified, but over time I sort of learned how to share and how to sort of look at the similarities and not the differences, because I would always look at the differences of people, and as soon as I saw similarities, I was sort of able to to realize maybe I'm not alone, maybe it's not me. So I was very fortunate that I had that behind me and I could use that. And I've got this saying that strangers saved my life, because I literally at 15, when I had it's a very young age, but I had serious alcohol problem. I was just thrown into a room of strangers. Some of them were 40, 50 years old. And I thought to myself, how on earth am I going to, you know, resonate with these people? So I was very fortunate that I had that. But saying that, within business, it's outside of drink, and it's outside of, you know, the addiction side. It's personal, it's your life, it's your, you know, you look at it like it's your baby. And even though I had people to speak to, it was really tough. I felt as if a lot of people sort of didn't understand me. I think that, you know, COVID was a really, really tough period for us, and everything just overnight just went to shit, and it was really, really, really tough. And I didn't speak to people from my meetings. I wasn't speaking to my fiance. I wasn't speaking to my friends. I was actually, because everyone perceived Cannawater as being incredible, I found it really hard to actually just turn around to people and be like, I'm really not in a good place. And everyone looks at me you know, I'd gone through sort of a lot as a child. I had a lot of illness in my family, a lot of cancer, unfortunately, in my family with four or five family members, and everyone sort of looks at me as like an unbreakable person because they know me as someone that's gone through a lot. Yeah, I didn't speak out. And from the age of 15 has learned that the best way is just to reach out to someone. And I'm the person actually that has always been the one to reach out to people. Are you okay? How are you? I remember last time you told me that things weren't okay. And I'm always the reacher outer, but I couldn't reach out to people. And I think that, you know, that's where I went wrong in COVID. And remember, like, I, as a kid, never thought I would have anything in life. And I'm sitting there, in an amazing flat that I just bought, through hard-earned money, a fiance, an amazing this, an amazing that. And I just felt like shit. And it was just a case of reaching out to someone and just sharing to them how I felt. And it was really funny, actually. I never would have done this because I would have been embarrassed to have done it. But I put up a post on my Instagram, literally just saying, I feel really shit. Does anyone feel like this, this similar to me? I'm really, really maybe want to do a group similar to AA, but just with, you know, people outside of that. Would anyone be interested? And overnight, I got 250 replies, literally in 24 hours. And me and a friend of mine started this weekly thing in COVID where anyone that felt like they had to, that they, you know, they felt low, they could join a group on Zoom and listen to people that have gone through, gone through experiences. So they didn't feel alone. So I think there's loads of ways, but I think the most important thing is just to be open and don't, you know, our thing is don't bottle it. You know, that's our slogan, but really, like, you know, don't bottle it all up, because I find that when I speak to someone, you know, and a lot of the time when I speak to someone, they'll come back to me and they'll be like, I'm so glad that you said that, because, you know, I go out with a group of boys or girls or whoever, and everyone's talking about how amazing everything is, and I feel like it isn't, and I'm so happy that you've said it because I feel like shit as well. So just by being open, you're actually helping others. And I think that, you know, for me, helping others is one of the most important things, and just reaching out is massively important.
Yeah, amazing, man. And I think we're slowly getting there. I think the last kind of 5-10 years with social media sort of exploding onto the scene, like, we've kind of gone in like a wave as a society where it's like, look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. And now suddenly it's like, actually, fuck it, I'm just going to tell the truth. And you start seeing like some really great people coming out now and doing exactly what you're doing, where like, actually, the chances are you're sat in a room with someone that's going through something similar, or maybe not exactly the same, but they're feeling the same way emotionally, and actually whatever it is that's got them to that point can differ, but by coming together and helping each other, it can resolve it. I'd love to touch on the don't bottle it, because I know that's kind of been the slogan from the start, and I know sort of prior to starting to record, we spoke about that being from plastic, but I now know as a business that's evolving into a slightly wider meaning. Like, talk us through that, man, because I think it's wicked.
For sure. So don't bottle it was just like can of waters. It's been our slogan since the very beginning. And it was just very much all about don't put water in plastic bottles, you know, just don't bottle it. And over the years, we've never really had a narrative for it. We all are obsessed with it and we talk about it all the time, but we never ever really, it's never really had a purpose wider than, you know, what it was made for. And we always felt that it could have, you know, it could have so many different meanings. And we've been doing a piece of work recently that I've felt really proud to be a part of. Because it very much sits within the DNA of why the brand was started and how the brand was started. And as I mentioned, we were never meant to be these entrepreneurs. You know, I sit in a lot of panels and I'm alongside a lot of people usually that are, you know, that it is, and it's very different to this, but, you know, they're bankers and they're, they were meant, you know, they were meant to be really successful in that world. And I sat on a Financial Times panel with the most fucking worst imposter syndrome ever, because these people were literally like, way, way, way beyond me. And I think that, yeah, the work that we've been doing recently is what is Don't Bottle It, and why, you know, what space should it sit in? And we landed at Don't Bottle It as being a vehicle to champion people who haven't bottled it, you know, and unlocking people's potential. And I heard a story the other day that really, really resonated with me. It was this jacked guy who is in the gym and he was doing his weights. And then this lady in a wheelchair came in, and he couldn't believe how incredible it was that this lady, who had obviously gone through an enormous mental battle in her head of, can I go to the gym? You know, she doesn't look like your typical gym person. You know, she's obviously had that battle that she's overcome of like, I'm going to go in and I'm going to, you know, I don't care what people think about me. I'm going to do it, and I'm not going to bottle it. And he went over to her and, you know, he said how inspiring, you know, it is. And, you know, that is what Don't Bottle It is about. It's about helping people realize their potential and, you know, turning those can'ts into cans and, you know, very much sort of proving that the impossible is possible. And as someone that never, ever thought that they had, you know, had that potential to be where I am today, I think that it's incredibly important. You know, I spoke to 300 kids today at school, and a lot of them came over to me afterwards just, you know, saying about how they've had professors in and this and that, and they don't resonate. You know, a lot of them, they don't resonate with that. And that sometimes they want to hear a bit more of the gritty side of things, because they're the things that, you know, I heard Stephen Bartlett talk recently about how he's never written a business plan. And it's sort of like, you know, people would have been in that room, and where I rated him for that comment, people would have been in that room thinking, I didn't start my business because I couldn't write a business plan. He's just unlocked the potential of thousands of people who are listening to that, who won't do the next, they can't get to the next stage because they're so scared. But one of the you know, the most listened geezer that a lot of people listen to, yeah, is telling you that you don't need to write, who sits on Dragon's Den. And I think that, you know, it's those types of things that Don't Bottle It is about, is, you don't have to be the best, but just try, just do it. Yeah. You know, and if you fail, I've failed plenty of times. And if you fail, just get up and, you know, just do it again. Don't bottle it. Yeah.
I love it. And when we go back to the way that you were like started this panel, and people being like, nah, it's never gonna work. I mean, it's like, it's wicked, man. I think it's super inspirational. And there's a couple of bits in there as well. Before I want to make sure we've got time to see if any of the audience have any questions, but what really struck me there was like, you saying that Stephen said don't write a business plan. I think like from school we're ingrained to go down that kind of, like, the educational sector will potentially push us into a route of being like, in order to start a business you need to do a business plan. So for you to go along and be talking to those kids about that is amazing, because you're so right. Like, even now when you get to a point where someone's like, oh, can I see a deck on like the 5-year plan? Like, I'm like, fucking hell, like, this is gonna take a while. And it's that kind of, I mean, just for background, I'm quite dyslexic. I use a calculator for 2 + 2. So like, it's to get to the end result of a presentation, it takes a while. But it's such a refreshing outlook. And I think that, like, it's such a key point, because it's going back to that realism, like, yes, in mental health, but also just in everything. Being like, you know what, like, if you're real about it and you've got a barrier, just break through it and try and get through it. I love it, man. And I'm so excited to see that kind of wider message come through over the next couple of years. Teddy, want to come to you, man. Like, how, give our listeners like some tangibles through the tough times, specifically to setting up Perfect Ted and the sort of day-to-day stuff that you guys are going through at the moment.
Sure. Probably the biggest thing I contend with on a daily basis is I'm 25 years old. I can't change that. Like, I can't grow any more facial hair. Like, this is my Movember. So when I get on a Zoom call, I'm pitching, they're like, oh, that's cute. You know, that's cute. And then they ask me for my 5-year plan. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm having for breakfast tomorrow, let alone 5 years from now. Like, as an example, when we first started, and hopefully most of you will get this, but I got asked, do you have any POS? So POS, for anyone that doesn't know, is like, I think, guys, correct me if I'm wrong, is like point of sale material. So it might be like flyers or things at checkout that will sort of advertise your product. And I said, yeah, I got a card machine. And they were like, who is this for? You know? So they have some right to look at me and think I'm inexperienced. But I think, so that's the biggest thing I contend with. And to Josh's point, like, it's a lot of imposter syndrome. You know, I'm sitting here on this panel feeling like an imposter. But I think one of the biggest things, as Josh has said, is just talking about it. And actually the weirdest thing about sitting here this evening is that this is therapy for me. Like, I feel closer to Jack when I'm talking about him. And, you know, people, it's awkward. And I'd love to hear what, I mean, you kind of alluded to it with your point about people don't want to talk about suicide. When I lost Jack, people, like, they wouldn't bring it up. And they'd be like, oh, I don't want to remind, you know, you're not going to remind me of my friend passing. Like, I know it happened, you know? So I think talking about it, and I think how are you has lost its meaning. So I think, you know, when you do ask someone how they are, how many times have you been asked, how are you? And then before you've even responded, they've gone on to the next thing. Like, just, so I think caring about other people, and, you know, the next year, 2 years are obviously going to be hard for a lot of people. The last couple of years have been super hard. So for us, it's all about just being there for each other. And when you ask someone how they are, just really mean it. And the one thing I'd probably end on that has been the most effective thing for me in actually changing, I guess, my happiness outcome has been gratitude journaling. And oh my God, I was so skeptical. I thought it was so soft. I mean, honestly, I thought, who journals, who diaries, that's so soft. And then I started doing, Marissa, my co-founder, said maybe you should try doing it. And I bought this 6-minute journal off Amazon, had great reviews. And I do 3 minutes in the morning on the train. You got it? You like it? That's amazing. So you have 3 questions in the morning, takes you 3 minutes. 3 questions in the evening, takes you 3 minutes, hence the 6. You got the calculator? And it's been the number one thing that I guess is, and you track, you know, you rate across 20 different things, might be family, relationships, belief in how good the future is going to be. And I posted on LinkedIn, actually, where I've come since September, which was, you know, quite a dark month in some ways for me in terms of, like, mentally, to where I've come this month. And I really put it down to just recognizing, there's a great song by Tones and I. You guys know Tones and I? Yeah. It's called Cloudy Day. And I think one of the lines is about, like, seeing the sun when it's a cloudy day, because it's true, like, your day may be shit. I had a shit day yesterday, but there's always at least one thing that goes well. And that might just be your own health or your family's health or the fact that, you know, you got a free coffee because they fucked up the order. Like, just something is bound to go well at some point during your day. So gratitude, I guess, has been the most important thing for me.
I think, yeah, it's amazing, man. And I saw that post on LinkedIn, and without knowing the backstory to it, and looked at the picture, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I saw, like, the bits that hadn't changed was, like, the exercise, like the healthy eating and all that, but your enjoyment had gone from, like, 4 to 7, right? And that was, like, that really hit home with me. And my sister and her husband do the same thing every evening, and they say, what am I grateful for? And initially, same as you, I was like, oh, shut the fuck up. but actually, when you start going through it, it trains your brain to be like initially I was like really thinking for, like, what's happened today, what big has happened today. And then suddenly, when you do distill it down to being like, actually, like, my mates are still around, and my family's happy, and you start then taking the smaller day-to-day things where you get positivity from. And because everyone always talks about, like, in any form of business, in whatever role you're in, that the highs are great and the lows are low, right? But if you can find that kind of straight line where you're like, actually, I'm happy with this bit is my life, and everything else can come and go, and then it's a lot easier. Like, I remember early days of Savorist getting a win, and you're like, wow, this is amazing. And then we had a product recall from a supermarket in Switzerland. I was like, fuck is going on? And, but you're like, you can't, like, you it's impossible to live life like that.
One of the biggest things is when you spend even a month writing down every single day what makes you happy, what made you happy that day, you can look back on the past month and you can see a trend of actually what makes you happy. For me, I honestly, I'm quite a psychotically ambitious person. I genuinely thought it was going to be like getting a listing. Truthfully, the thing that makes me happy is my younger brother, Didier, doing well at school, or me speaking more nicely to my mother, who I'm frequently impatient with. Little things like that. And then you start to see actually what makes you happy. And it's not, at least for me, it's not more sales, although that helps. It's the little things.
Yeah. No, it's great. Because there's also, I'm sure everyone in the room and all the listeners as well, like there's a point where you go, I really want this. In business, a win, for example, I really want to land X. And then X happens and you're like, well, where's the next? Like you kind of like, 10 years ago, if someone said that Crunchers were an EasyJet, I'd be like, oh my God. And now I'm like, why haven't we dominated the US? Like, but because you change the whole time, right? But actually finding that kind of middle ground where you get to a point where you're happy with that and you can pull it apart. Like I'm terrible. And Josh, we were talking before as well about like switching off. And it doesn't necessarily mean that like when you're like, oh, working really hard, it's not that you're at your desk like typing an email all the time, but we'll get home and watch a film. And we'll get like halfway through and I'll be like, I've got no idea what's going on because I haven't really been watching it. It's like your brain's just like, and Josh and I were saying like part of that's like ADHD related, but also because you're just in that point of being like, fuck yeah, I'm excited. And no, this is great. But taking that time to gratitude and really get it down on paper is super key. I'm really conscious of time and I want to make sure that we've got a few questions from the audience. Do you guys have any questions? Is there anyone out there? Amazing. Chloe's got a mic for you.
Josh, I've got a question for you, which is I guess you're of all three of the guys closest to an exit. Do you ever worry about your mental health when you were to exit from your company and what your kind of meaning might be as a person after you were to walk away from something that you've built so hard or worked so hard to build?
For sure, it's a good question and something that I frequently think about. I think the person I am today is a much different person. I think that I accept it. I think for me, you know, I've given Cano water my all, and I think that I will be there to the end type of thing, and until I reach, I guess, my potential within the brand. But I think I definitely feel like I have, Cano Water's given me this greater meaning. I am obsessed with doing good. So, you know, Cano Water for me, that feeling of, you know, providing a more recyclable alternative to plastic. And, you know, people always say to me, do you get scared of competition? Because, you know, Evian has just launched a sparkling water. And, you know, in America, you've got loads of brands that are putting water in cans. It actually excites me. Because that's why we started the business. We started the business as a purpose-led business. We saw that Evian and Coca-Cola were doing X and we wanted them to do it as well. So we created Cano Water. So I think that I'm really proud of where the business has gone to, but I'm also very aware that I'm probably not going to be the person to carry it forever. And I think that that's just something that, you know, I've had to accept. But as a whatever you want to call it, entrepreneur or someone that, you know, has I feel like I have a greater meaning and I know that what I want to do in life is everything that I start and everything that I'm part of has to add value to something. It's incredibly important to me. Mental health is something that, you know, it's why I got, you know, when I got asked, that sits incredibly close to my heart. So something that, you know, I don't put it this way. I don't necessarily think that I'll be going into drinks again, but I definitely will want to go into something where I can make a difference. And I just feel that for myself, that's what gets me up in the morning. So I'm quite, you know, I'm scared of exit. I'm from a purpose perspective, but I'm also really, really excited to see what, you know, when I started Cano Water, I was literally like, I didn't know anything that I know now. So the person I am today, I'm excited to see what I can do. So yeah.
Chloe, I think there's one down the front.
I've got so many questions. firstly, Teddy, great name. I sort of got a question for
his name's also Teddy, just to like.
I sort of got a question for all three of you, but it's going to be slightly different. So I'll ask all of them and then maybe like from Harry onwards, you guys could possibly answer. But Harry, what more could, other than getting in Corin and Co to train up teams, what more can big businesses be doing?
That's all magic. No?
What more can they be doing? And then with you guys, sort of companies with lesser resource, what has been not easy wins, but things that you've done to implement culture when bringing people in that aren't completely like wired into your vision? You're sort of bringing in external people to sort of help build your sort of brand and your dreams. What have been like the easiest things to do and like therefore the most rewarding, but also the most challenging things about building the culture?
Cool. Yeah. So no, great question. You know, work is what, 8 hours a day, minimum 5 days a week. Most people, like, there's nothing out in society where it gives us an opportunity to actually make a true difference. This is like me now pitching to the work we do. But it's true though. Like, it's not a lie. Like, we have an unbelievable opportunity. And you take away the work factor of that. If you've got hundreds of people in some organizations spending that amount of time with each other, you're in a unique position to actually spot the signs earlier. And you can do that by creating a culture that actually supports open, honest conversations and mental health. And everyone approaches me and says, well, how do we get to that point? And then you look at what they've done and, you know, you're like not even touching the surface. Yeah. And I was approached again, like you said, I can't say the name of who it was, a very, very, very large company. One of the largest companies ever has approached me asking to me to do a talk on suicide. I asked why, found out that they had suicide in their organization too. And the months leading up to when they asked me, and then I asked outright, like, you know, what else are you doing around it? And it was like about 1%. What they should have been doing in that moment. So like, you're thinking, okay, so I'm going to come in and talk, going to pour my heart out, tell my story. And what's the goal? People are going to be more open, hopefully. And then what? No one's trained. No one's equipped to actually have those conversations. They don't know about the support that's available in their workplace. Bringing me in is a greater risk to you. And they're like, shit. Yeah. Okay. So one would be to, you know, employee assistance programs, therapy, like the role in which organizations can play to help to normalize therapy. You know, I have spoke to HR leaders, people leaders in the past that wouldn't know the name quickly off the top of their head of what their employee assistance provider is actually called. They're paying tens of thousands, some hundreds of thousands of pounds on actual therapy that their organizations can access. That needs to be the front of every single thing that they're doing. Every single senior leader needs to be talking about it. Maybe now I'm talking a bit more about bigger businesses, but like, even in smaller businesses, you might know of the South Space in London. It's like a high street therapy provider. It's working with some smaller brands. You can walk into that therapy provider in the same way as you can walk into your barbershops or your beauticians. Like, wow, like that's incredible. Like, small organizations can help make that easily accessible for their team. So like, you're thinking, yes, training, like the role that I play is very, very small. But it's an important one to get the right people into a training room. And then I use my time with consultancy as well to encourage all of those other aspects. When you get senior leaders on board, like individual senior leaders who really, really genuinely want to make a difference, that's all of our work. But not every organization is lucky enough to have that, and it shouldn't come down to luck again. So yeah, training, senior leader education, and yeah, an actual employee assistance provider, access to therapy that is at the forefront of every single thing that they do. Yeah.
Guys, you want to come in there as well?
Yeah, but before, I'd like to address a gentleman at the back. Presumptuous that we're not going to exit before Can of Water.
We can't.
We'll talk about it later. We'll compare notes.
It's also our name, so we can't really do that.
So apart from the exit, and so I feel like in terms of mental health in the organization, first, I think I feel like I have two obligations. One is towards other founders. So founders in general are just way more predisposed to mental health issues versus the general population. And so one of sort of the things that it's really tough, because I think especially, you know, we're not really a D2C business, we're more retail, and retailers love to stock brands that are doing well. And there's so much peacocking on LinkedIn. Is peacocking the right word? Peacocking? Like, you know, when you like show your feathers.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think it's peacocking. And it just makes everyone feel like shit. So part of the thing that we're trying to do is, I think it's so important to celebrate the wins from like a team morale perspective. But I also think one of the most important things is to sort of show the ups and downs, show the true authentic journey, show the times when you're down, show the losses, show the delistings, I mean, ultimately with the view that everything will get better and, you know, you'll have wins in the future. But I think just being super honest about how hard the journey is, especially with our content, right? It's super fun. It's uplifting. And I think people have this impression of me now that I mean, apart from the fact the name's called Perfect Ted, I'm far from perfect. And I'm imperfectly happy as well, as I've kind of shared today. So I think part of that is just being super open with people. In terms of our organization and our culture, there's actually a great show on Netflix at the moment with Jonah Hill, and he talks to his therapist. And one of the things he talks about is sort of the sense of purpose. And it's such a cliche term and it's thrown about so much. And I haven't necessarily found my purpose, but I feel like one of the biggest things that we can do as an organization in terms of improving happiness outcomes is ensuring that everyone feels like they're not just trying to push more volume of or number of cans into people's hands, but they're working towards something more, especially if you're spending, you know, 40 hours a week. Shani, who's here, will probably say more than 40 hours a week. but, you know, you want to be making sure that you're doing something that you actually care about. And that's super tough, right? Because you have a bottom line. So it's sort of marrying purpose with like commercials, I guess.
Yeah.
But that wasn't a very good answer. And the truth is we want to do more and we should chat.
Love it.
I think that, you know, for us, it is purpose is a big thing within Caddawater, and it's so incredible. There's 12 of us now, and it's actually crazy. The other day, I just zoned out in the office, and I was just smiling at the team, and they were looking at me like, "What the fuck are you looking at?" I just couldn't believe that, like, a few years ago it was just the three of us, and now there's 12 people in the office, and they're all here for the same goal, and some of them with the like enormous amounts of experience, 20, you know, 15, 20 years, and it's sort of like you're now with us in the organization. So that's like massively, massively exciting. But culture is so, you know, so important to me and the team. And I think being open and also not sort of overshadowing people as well. So letting people, you know, you're in here because we trust you, and that sort of toxic culture, like we really, really like so far away from that. We just want people to sort of to flourish and to add to the culture. And, you know, there have been times where, you know, it has been tough to adapt because we are a small team. And sometimes when it is small, it's tough to adapt because everyone's quite fun and friendly and you've got to keep yourself up because there's a lot of lows. So it's like so I think sometimes it can be hard to adapt, but once you have the right culture and the right vibe, like, yeah, just, you know, I regularly sit with, you know, with people in the team, and I'm just like, you know, and you talk about how are you, you know, how actually are you? You know, I think that's the thing, that how actually are you? I think a lot of people, it's just like, I'm fine. And I've always learned that fine means fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. So I always ask, no, how are you? And, you know, a lot of the time, I think with the team, I like it when they open up to me and they go deep, because they know that I've got their back, and they know that, you know, if they need a time out or they want to, you know, go on a walk at lunchtime, I'm not, you know, there's no clock watching here, you know, it's we're all on the same journey. And, you know, without them, there would be no Caddawater. And I think that some founders forget that. And it's incredibly important to realize that these are the people, these are the, you know, the most important people, you know, within the business. And funny enough, like with Harry, you know, I saw Harry when he was at Kind, and followed your journey, and it's so great to see people come out of places like Kind to sort of set up their own thing for the greater, you know, for the greater good. That, I don't know, might have not have happened if you hadn't have gone to that, you know, to that, it were in that room at Kind. And I think that those are the things that really excite me about the people within our business, about, you know, they could be the future, whatever. And I think that, you know, and I'd love to be a part of their journey.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I think culture is just it's such a hard nut to crack, because you can't really crack it. It just has to kind of come, right? Like, and we all know there's businesses out there that have terrible culture, and obviously teams just leave, right? Like, and that's just kind of not how it is. So no, it's super interesting to hear. And like, I came up through working at Causton Press, and my first job there was a backpack of cans, and was like walking out just kind of Del Boy around the streets of London selling cans. But like, the team there were fucking awesome, and I loved it. And like, came out of that and was like, if I can create that vibe at the Savourist, then we're doing something well. Because you'd go out for beers after work, and you look around and you're like, everyone genuinely wants to be here. And like, this is outside of hours. You're not kind of like, oh, for God's sake, I've got to go down the pub with my bloody boss. It's like, you're like, no, actually, I want to kind of like chill, and this is quite fun. Maybe it's just me geeking out of work, but like, it was it was great, and I took a load from it. But look, I'm conscious of everyone's time, so I'm gonna start wrapping it up. But Harry, if we start with you, can you just give our listeners, like, where can they find you, how can they find out a little bit more about you, and potentially connect with you in the future?
Yeah, definitely. So the website, got a fairly new website. So yeah, we've got all of our details of the training products that we deliver on there. I guess for me, like, LinkedIn is where I'm probably most active, talking about the charity partnerships that we do, different training products, things like this. So yeah, LinkedIn and our website. But no, just anyway, really. Anyway you'd like to connect, here, obviously stay around for a bit. Yeah, I can share any details. And we'd love to, you know, even if it's, you know, sometimes I think what gets missed is that this was something I didn't talk about, then became a hobby, then became a business. So like, it doesn't have to just be a commercial conversation. I go, that I still quite like helping people in the same way as I did for my, you know, most of my time. So if it's just like informal conversations or things that I can signpost you to for friends, family, like, that kind of is still really important. And I try and still kind of hold on to that as much as I can. So yeah, however way you want to keep in touch.
And Teddy?
Where can you find me?
Yeah. Well, how can sorry, I don't mean that.
Quite hard question.
It's the way that we end most
West
episodes.
London. But
it's going out to the listeners, really. Like, how can they get in touch with you? Like, LinkedIn,
yeah.
Full name, all that sort of jazz.
Yeah, I put out on LinkedIn, like, genuinely, if anyone wants to talk, apart from if you're trying to sell me services, like,
yeah.
Hit me up, seriously. Or at Perfect Ted Energy is our Instagram, TikTok, all that.
Amazing. Yeah. You don't need any packaging suppliers from China.
No.
And Josh, if we come to you last week.
Yeah, LinkedIn as well. And then, yeah, anything at Can of Water, or just, yeah, DM me on Insta, Josh_White1. Go get the plug. But no, like, similar to what Teddy said, you know, I'm very, very open. And if anyone, you know, has any questions, always down to help.
Amazing. Thank you. And look, guys, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you guys for coming in, like, talking about imposter syndrome. Like, I'm sat here with you dudes, like, fucking hell, this is it's really an amazing moment in Untold, and also in the journey of the Savior. So like, I thank everybody for coming, you guys for being here, our listeners at home, thank you so much for tuning in and giving us your time each week. Like, it means a lot. We are Untold Podcast. Do subscribe, tell your mates, tell everyone. If you like us, we're Untold. If you don't like us, we're Hungry Podcast run by Dan Pope. I'm only joking. He listens to this and he's a good lad. Guys, thank you so much. We'll leave you to it, and we'll see you next time. Ta-da. Thank you so much for giving us your time and listening. I really hope you've enjoyed. If you have enjoyed, please, please, please do download, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your friends' friends, tell your friends' mum's dog. It all really helps us grow the podcast, ultimately bring on more guests, which will be able to get us to give across more tangible takeaways. Thank you so much again. I'm Harry Turpin, your host, founder of The Savourists. We love you lots. Take care. Keep jiggling.